guys some background. I focus with my premium selling program on very boring, sideways, choppy stocks. Now, I am very disciplined with all my option strategies. So no matter what you throw at me, we can definitely figure out a way to trade it. But if you've got that symbol that is sideways and choppy, those are the ones that my group and I, in fact, I just got off of a call where we found about five or six, four really high probability candidates that we are going to be trading sideways, choppy, that you might want to throw at me. But I see IONQ from Steve. So let's take a look at IONQ. All right. So what do we got here? I'm going to go back 2 years. And the reason why I'm doing that is I like to get the bigger picture of things and then zoom into the present. A lot of times my program participants and I, we focus so much on the more recent bars that we lose track of what led us to where we are. So I like to see kind of just from a technicals perspective. So this is a company, IONQ Inc., that doesn't seem like they make any money. Every time they report earnings, they report a loss. But yet investors still seem to be interested in them, don't they? I see that they were trading sideways for quite a while from approximately May of 2022 until May of 2023. And now they've been on a little bit of a gainer, going from being about $5 all the way up to a max of $20. And now it looks like they're on their way down. When it comes to just looking at charts, one of my favorite things to do is look at a retracement analysis. So I'll put some sort of confirming lagging indicator on. One of my favorites for this kind of speed of this particular one is the 3 and 5 day EMA. Now you'll see on my charting software, and I'm just coming off of a webinar that we did with my paid subscribers where an all-in-one. I'm not saying I personally don't use Thinkorswim for my own portfolio and trading, but I always poll my paid subscribers and I learn whatever software they're using. And a majority of them that are option traders are using this Thinkorswim, although there has been over the past years a real push into Tom Sosnoff's new software, which is Trade Thirsty. I don't even want to tell you what I use. I'm like an old, I've been trading options since for coming up on 26 years. And so my software solutions are not even current, but I use them because I'm familiar with them and I'm very good with them. And I've been using them for decades. And I don't like to change. So I'm going to do my best to use Thinkorswim. Anyway, I've got this indicator. I took the MACD math, the math behind how they calculate the MACD, and instead I threw a 3 and 5 day. So it's easier for me to see when the 3 crosses the 5 day EMA. And all I'm using this for, I'm just going to highlight the crossings here with a vertical line. All I'm using this for is confirming when I have a top and a bottom in my retracement analysis. So I'm basically just highlighting every time the 3 clearly crosses over the 5 and back again. And I'll go back here until it looks like this uptrend had started. So you can see it gets quite muddled when we were going sideways. And what I do then with a simple line on close chart, because in my world, closing prices are everything, is now I'm going to identify and connect the high and the low closes that are confirmed by these vertical lines. So I look at the vertical line and I'm going to go back. And this is going to get me an idea of what sort of trend I'm dealing with. Now I've got a close here on June 23rd of $9.37, $9.22, $9.31. So I'm going to use the 922, splitting hairs here, of course. And then over here, we're looking for a high. This is $10.63. This is $10.65. And then we're going to go back down for a low. And basically, I'm finding the low and the high in between each of those confirmations. So it looks like we're going to go with this guy and go with. And I have to say, when I have to like split hairs by pennies, It already tells me that this is a more difficult symbol to trade. All right. So what I'm looking at here, now I'm going to put back in my open high and low prices in addition to what I was looking at with respect to the closing price. And we can even go with what's current, although I'm going to change the color of this retracement analysis line because it's living, right? In fact, I'll go to yesterday's close because this is a live bar since the market is still open for about another hour. So I'm going to change the color of this guy to signify that he could still change on us, right? But basically now I've got an idea. I can even ditch the lagging indicator, which I'm going to do to just clean up my chart. Let's go ahead and remove all studies. I get an idea of exactly what's been happening. So an ideal trend is one that expands greater than about 125% of the previous move and contracts to about 50% of that move. And if you're a Fib fan, you know, that's great. I use the Fibs too, but I use them not because I think they're magic like some people like to believe, but use them more as like a ruler. So I'm going to take a look at this most recent retracement. And I'm going to extend it to where we are right now. And as you can see right now, extend it to the right. As you can see right now, we have come right into that like 50% range. I highlighted the zone from about 40% to 60%, or if you're a Fib person, 38.2 to 61.8%. I've highlighted the zone, and this is where I'd like this current range contraction, if we're going to be in an ideal strong uptrend, to kind of reverse and start heading back up. If it overpasses this, that tells me that this uptrend is quite suspect. And if it continues down and does more than 100% retracement, I'm pretty clear that we have found a top rather than continuing on with the uptrend. So that gives me kind of a DNA of what this is doing. Right now, this is setting up quite nicely for some sort of swing trade, it looks like. And so I might be looking at this for a swing trade, but I wouldn't want to trade it until I get my indicators to signify that this is a swing trade. But I also have to look back over here and I have to be honest. The current uptrend that we started back in the May timeframe, and it actually looks like from my retracement analysis, the hints of it actually started all the way back into March, but the real uptake, you know, started up in May. And this is all from this retracement analysis that I like to start with. This isn't the most ideal or mature trend. And so the predictability of future price action based on previous price action becomes suspect, right? So based on a lot of that, I probably personally wouldn't put this on my hot list of one that I'd want to trade. Given that said, you threw me the ticker, how would I trade this? I'd probably look at it right now as some sort of swing trade. When I swing trade, my favorite pattern, I call it the reactive template, is to look for some sort of first trend. I'm going to throw a study set on here that says reactive. What I've got here is I've got the 30-day simple moving average that establishes that we do indeed have an uptrend. It basically corroborates my retracement analysis. Then I take a look at, and I don't really need this guy right here, so I move him. I look at some sort of leading indicator to make sure that in the swing trade, we've pulled back enough that we're going to get that whipsaw effect. And so that I'm using, in this case, Larry's Williams percent R. And then ultimately, I look for a crossing for my actual trade signal, and I use end of day signals. So at an end of day, I would like to see my closing price close up above this 7-day moving average. And that would give me a signal to try to trade it the next day. So I would check in every evening on this symbol. And if I got an evening where I got a close above this cyan line, this 7-day simple moving average, I would then probably that evening, I'd also look to make sure that there's some volume validation, maybe a nice price bar, maybe like a good S bar or some sort of, if you're into candlestick analysis, some sort of lead up to a nice reversal up. And then the day of trading, I would just make sure that when I go in there to trade, I usually trade in the afternoon session after any economic news has been released and after the amateur hour as well in our rearview mirror. I would make sure that price is going in the direction I wanted to. It's above yesterday's close and it's above today's open range, the high established in the first 30 minutes of trading. And if all of those criteria are met, I'd pull the trigger. Now, I'd like to trade options, so I would probably find some sort of option substitute. There's a couple of choices that I would use here. I would either use a 6 month out, 3 to 6 month out option that is a couple of steps in the money, that would act as a good stock replacement, maybe as many as 3 or 4 steps in the money that would build up the option intrinsic value, still give us some leverage, but not have the option behave based on implied volatility or theta decay, and behave mostly on the swing move of the underlying symbol. Or I could also see putting a little bit more options analysis behind it and picking an out of the money option about 3 months out, that I would basically be trading that, an out of the money option actually doesn't go up linearly with the underlying symbol price. It goes up parabolically. That means that the gains, if you buy it right in the middle of the parabola, I can actually draw this on my screen. I don't know why I'm trying to show you guys with my hand. When you're dealing with the extrinsic value, what's really nice is if you buy this guy here, any movement of the underlying symbol is going to give you exponential gains. Oh, I have my magic marker set to evaporate. Let's try that again. Any movement of the underlying symbol is going to give you exponential gains, whereas any movement that might happen against your position will actually have muted gains. So I really like that. The trick is you have to put a little bit more analysis into it about where the strike price should be. Like, where do you believe that the swing trade will end, and put the strike price as close as you can past that. You really don't want your underlying symbol in this type of trading to go above that strike price. You want to trade in this like parabolic zone right here. So if you can get a swing in your underlying symbol that goes this amount, you'll get a nice big move in your extrinsic value. So there's a lot of thought putting in with your option selection. Usually when you talk about talk to traders who leverage options, they use options as stock substitutes, you'll notice they default to the more typical, I go 3 to 6 months out, 2 strike prices in the money and trade that one. That's just kind of a no-brainer. It doesn't require much analysis. It includes a little bit of leverage that options give you. But if you really want to get elegant and want to really stack your reward and your benefit and also make it so that if something goes against you, the losses get muted, you know, you might want to research how to trade out of the money options and how to mute the effects of implied volatility and theta decay. Theta decay means how options tend to lose their value as time passes by. So that's kind of a neat symbol. I would trade it like a swing trade and use some sort of option strategy that's a stock substitute. So that's kind of my thought. David, let me know if I'm doing this correctly, if I'm just supposed to be giving you my thoughts like this, or if I'm supposed to be doing anything else special. Otherwise, I'll just go on to the next symbols. It looks like we've got Paul. He's interested. He's got 3 different symbols. Well, we've got quite a few different symbols. Actually, Paul brought up the SPX. And so I like to use, so for my watch list and my hot list, which is a derivation of my watch list that is candidates that I actually think are ready to pop at any minute, they're very much following the S&P 500 versus the Dow or the NASDAQ, right? I follow a lot of boring stocks. And I look at, like, you know, you hear reported by the mainstream media, the Dow Jones Industrial all the time, right? That's what they report at the end of every evening on the nightly news and all that stuff. I look at it almost like you would imagine the royal family in Great Britain. The Dow is like the king and the queen, whereas the SPX is the prime minister, right? The S&P 500 is the prime minister. I pay more attention to the prime minister because they're the ones who are actually more related to what I'm doing. I don't know if that helps with that analogy, but here we go. So I've been doing that same retracement analysis because I use it throughout my trading. And I'm going to get rid of that reactive study here because that's not actually pertinent. So here's the S&P 500, and it started this current uptrend rally based on my analysis back on March 6th is when it really had the underpinnings of this current uptrend. And it, you could see here, it wasn't ideal by any means. We were just barely getting a 100% retracement on the uptrend's expansion moves. And we were almost getting 100% retracement back on the contraction moves, just slightly less. So we were still doing the uptrend, but it was far from ideal. It was far from mature for quite a while. It took a whole month or so for it to really get going. But then starting with this move that started at the end of May, we started to get some more ideal moves. And we were actually thinking, and we knew that about 18 months ago, we had a lot of buying right at this 4,600 level. If you can imagine, it was a bunch of investors who were probably not traders, but they had FOMO, right? If I look at that bigger picture, you can see back here, and I'm going to go back even farther. I'm going to go back 3 years. I mean, try to bring yourself back about 3 years. You saw the S&P 500 like it had no bottom. All your friends at, you know, coffee table parties or coffee, you know, whatever you want to call it, cocktail parties, were making money hand over fist, whether it was with crypto or what, and the market was going up, it looked like no bottom. So you had a whole bunch of people being enticed into the market that really, in my opinion, shouldn't have been there in the first place. And so what happens with those people, they tend to buy at the last minute. There was a lot of buying, quantitative analysis, looking at NASDAQ level four data. You see a ton, like, I wish I could cuss it, but a heck ton of buying by probably people who shouldn't have been coming into the markets in the first place at 4,600. And then all of a sudden the market dipped. And you can just imagine these people being afraid to go home and tell their significant others that they just invested half of their, you know, retirement account, or they mortgaged their house. You know, I had a couple of clients who came to me around this time, and they had been doing trading on margin because, you know, it was like super easy. You couldn't really F up when the market, when, you know, the Fed was doing all this quantitative easing, you know, there was money to be had. People were, you couldn't mess up. And so they got in and they started trading on margin. And he came to me, one of the persons I was thinking about, and he's like, you got to help me. I started trading on margin. I owe the broker over $2 million and I don't have $2 million. I'm like, why are you trading with money you don't have? But yeah, so you have all these people who are afraid, you know, they've got this big, they've turned white as a sheet. They've got this big lump in their throat and they've been sitting on that lump. They've been hemming and hawing for the last 18 months. And now price finally gets up to that range again. And they're so excited that if you look at the amount of sell orders that are being placed at the 4,600 level, and then ultimately at the 4,800 level, which is the all-time high, it's incredible. So in other words, that's going to be some major overhead resistance that you're going to have to somehow find a whole bunch of buying to outweigh all the selling that's about to occur at that level and get yourself higher. And we tried to, if you can see here, this last, we tried to approach that 4,600 level trepidatiously, and that's not going to be the way. You've got to have a whole bunch of momentum of buyers, professional traders, to outweigh all those amateur traders that just want to get out and breathe a sigh of relief for the first time in 18 months. So I was watching this very carefully. I talk about this on my YouTube show. I run a YouTube show every Friday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern time. That's what, 10, 9, 8 a.m. Pacific time. And we've been talking about this every week in our show. And we were expecting a pullback, but you know, there's a lot going on. There's questions about is the Fed happy enough? There's questions about supply chains. There's questions in the world about inflation, whether or not some countries are going to get grain out of the Ukraine. There's still a skirmish going on in the Ukraine. So there's a lot of uncertainty. We were looking carefully at that ideal zone with the S&P 500, which would have been between these two pink lines, that would have been a perfect zone if we wanted to make another run at 4,600 to contract to and then go for it, right? But the professional traders and all the investors out there couldn't, they're just too skeptical. And so there wasn't a mass amount of buying, especially not enough buying to blast up through 4,600. So there continued to be uncertainty, there continued to be selling. And guess what's happening today? We're about to surpass this prior retracement by over 100%. And so I'm about to call on tomorrow's YouTube show that if that happens, if today we get a close below this, I'm going to go out on a limb tomorrow. And I'm basically going to say that the beginning of the current downtrend actually started back in the beginning of the summer doldrums on July 7th. And the end of the uptrend, there's always an overlap of one move between when one medium to long-term trend ends and one medium to long-term begins. The end of the uptrend happened on July 31st. The beginning of the current downtrend actually started on July 7th, and we'll see what happens and whether or not this matures. For the folks that are part of my following, we like sideways channels, right? When you see the VIX, when you see the S&P do this, you can also look over at the VIX, which is a measurement of kind of anticipated volatility on the S&P. And you can start to see that the VIX is rising. What that means for us is we like to sell premium. We sell option premium. We sell near-term at-the-money options, specifically knowing that they're going to expire worthless at the end of their expiration date in 3 to 5 weeks. And we create income off of our portfolios by selling these options. And so we've got a whole science around the timing and the option selection to do that. And we especially like it when the market starts to go sideways, choppy, like we're seeing on the S&P. We're seeing this, we're not seeing a clear uptrend anymore. We don't know if we're turning into a mature and ideal downtrend, but we know that we're going to start probably loiter in this level between, you know, who knows, 4,300 and 4,600 for a while if we don't go into a full-blown downtrend. So with that said, and with the VIX rising, the VIX basically tells us how much we can, you know, can we get more for our usual option? The VIX is measured, I'm going to simplify this, but implied volatility is basically measured on the options market, right? You can't measure a stock's implied volatility if it doesn't have some sort of derivative traded against it. Because what the mathematicians do is they factor out of an option price the expiring asset component, right? That's pretty predictable. And they factor out what the underlying symbol of that derivative, how that contributes to price, that can also be quite quantifiable. And what's left is a measurement of what is the demand or supply of that option. And most of you might know that the big money traders out there use options not as leverage, but they use them as protection, as insurance policies on their bigger holdings. And so when you see a large uptick in demand, which raises the option prices, you know that they want to be protecting, that they foresee something that they feel like they need to be buying protection for. So when you see the VIX goes up, it means that there's a demand for options, most likely being used as protection against bigger positions. We, in my program, we put ourselves on the side of the equation where we're selling those options. So when we see that uptick in demand, which means there's probably some uncertainty, some confusion, something's happening in the markets. When we see that, we get excited because it means that the options that we're selling every month, we're going to get a higher premium than usual for them. People are nervous. So we kind of, my folks and I strive on markets that are going sideways and on markets that have a little bit of fear in them. So that's what I wanted to point about. I've been watching the SPX very carefully yesterday and today to see if this level gets crossed. And as of halfway through this professional hour, we're at 35 more minutes before the market closes. We're clearly crossing that, which I'm going to go out on a limb tomorrow and basically say that this current uptrend has met its end and that we're now going to be seeing if a new downtrend. So I'm glad you brought up the SPX. That was Paul. Let's pick up a symbol from Maria S. I think that's what your username says. So I'm going to pick one. She's got the Russell, she's got Wendy's, she's got PFE and SLV. Those are all good symbols. Let's look at Wendy's. For a while there, I was looking at Wendy's quite carefully. I even traded it quite a bit this past end of 2022, 2023. Something happened. I got out of my position. I think I was exercised and I didn't get back in. So let's take a quick look. Again, I like to zoom out and then zoom back in. Let's look at a 2-year chart. This is a 1-year chart. Let's go to 2-year daily. So just looking at this bigger picture with Wendy's, let me ditch my drawings here so that we're looking at just a naked chart here. So I'm going to go to remove my drawings, clear my drawing set. Yep. All right. So you can see that Wendy's is in some sort of sideways, choppy pattern here, testing a level of support around $21. And it's probably got a level of resistance around 2350, something like that. Now that I know that we came up off of this uptrend after a sell-off here, I can focus my attention on this part of the chart. That's the part I'm interested in. And I have to say that just looking at the pattern, at least the way that I usually trade premium, first of all, this is a slower pattern. I like to see a move in my sideways choppy trades, a move between support and resistance happening between every month. You can see these red dotted lines on my chart. Those represent when expirations of options, monthly options happen. I'd like to see it moving more often because then I can capitalize on creating an income stream every time an option expires. Monthly options expire on the third Friday of every month. With the way that Wendy's is moving, just in the last 6 months, I'd only be able to really create maybe two income paydays for myself because I like to leg into the positions and adjust the positions after each one of these reversals. Also, I could possibly see, just based on what I'm looking at, that I could, depending on the indicators I use or the ways I use to determine whether I've hit a top or a bottom of my sideways choppy channel, I could see a lot of possible false positives and creating some confusion in when I should adjust this trade. But otherwise, I have had good luck with Wendy's. It is on my watch list. It's not on my current hot list. And it does look like it's coming here looking to test a bottom. So generally what I do when I'm trading something for premium is I'll set up a initial covering position. We have to have some sort of initial covering position in place in order to sell those options because your broker is going to say, listen, if they decide to exercise those options, I want to make sure you are prepared to do that. So in order to sell an option, we have to be prepared. When we sell an option and collect money for something, that's just not for no reason. We are putting ourselves under a obligation to fulfill whatever the instructions of that option is between now and when that option expires or when we unwind that trade. So every time we sell an option, there is a obligation. For instance, in a call option, your obligation is if the person you sold the option to ever exercises it, they're going to come to you and make you give them some stock shares, right? For every option share that they bought from you, they have the right and you have the obligation to perform. They have the right to take your stock shares and in return give you whatever the strike price of that option is. And they have that right until it expires on the expiration date. In the case of a put option, They don't want to take they don't want to take your stocks. They want to give you stock shares, and in return you have to give them the cash of whatever that strike price is. So if there's a if you sell, for instance, a 21 strike price option, put option here, basically what you're obligating yourself to is to buy this stock at $21 if anybody ever comes a knocking to exercise that put option. In fact, on a side note, if there is a stock that you want to add to your long-term portfolio, may I recommend that instead, you know, a lot of people say, well, I want to add, let's just pick a stock. I see that somebody says Apple. So let me give you an idea, AAPL, and let me get rid of my chicken scratch that I put on the screen. So say, for instance, you'd like to add Apple to your long-term portfolio. So if you're just a stock trader, what are your choices? You have a choice to do a market order, means basically you're going to buy Apple at whatever price you can. You're guaranteed to get the fill, and you'd have Apple in your portfolio, but you'd pay whatever the market's willing to sell it to you at that moment. A lot of people who are adding things long-term into their portfolio, they don't use market orders. They use limit orders, right? They say, I'm willing to pay $170 for a share of Apple. And then the next question is how long do you want that order to be enforced? Do you want it to be good for the day, good for the week, good till cancel? There's all these things that you can put in as parameters for your order. Let me give you an alternative. So if you're about to use a limit order, and say, for instance, you want to buy Apple at $170 and you're willing to pay, and you have $170 for each share, consider instead selling a put option. So let me show you. Over here in our put options, if I come over here to Apple, let's go with one that's going to, so options for August are expiring tomorrow. So I'm going to use the September option. This one's expiring September 15th. By the way, you could use weekly options. I'm showing you on here an option chain for just monthlies, but I can show you weeklies. I personally stick with the monthlies because I'm kind of lazy like that. So here's that $170 put option. So what is this saying? If I sell this put option, first of all, my broker is going to make sure that I have $170 times 100. So options are sold in lots of 100. They're called contracts. And correct me if for any of you out there who are like, he's telling me, some of you I know are beginners with options. So that's why I'm explaining this down to the detail. So you have to make sure that if you're willing to do this, that you're going to be doing it in lots of 100. So for in this case, you'd need to have what, $17,000, because you're going to do this in lots of 100 each. You have to have that money set aside. But if you were going to be buying Apple for your portfolio anyway, you'd have the money set aside. So that's a no-brainer. So you're willing to pay $1,700, sell $17,000, sell this put option instead of doing a limit order. Because what this put option is saying is, I'm willing to buy, I'm okay obligating myself to buy Apple at $170. And this put option is good until September 15th. So it's kind of like saying, I'll put a limit order in for Apple at 170, good till September 15th. The difference is I get to collect money. So when I put a limit order in, there's no money coming my way. But with selling the put option, I'm going to get right this minute $2.57 per share. And since it's 100, I'm going to get $257 just for putting this in place. It acts exactly like the limit sell order, a limit buy order, but I'm getting paid. And if I get to September 15th and nobody agrees to sell me Apple for $170, I still get to keep the $257. And if somebody does sell it to me for the $17,000, just think about, you're buying it a little bit cheaper because you got to keep that $257. You could apply that and just basically say, hey, I bought Apple on a discount, however you want to mentally do it. But why people don't buy stocks this way every time, I don't know. In fact, I've asked, and a lot of people think that it's just confusing, but I think limit buy orders are stupid, right? Sell a put instead. I'd sell a put. If I'm adding stocks to my portfolio in the long term, I have a friend who keeps adding NVIDIA to their portfolio. And I'm like, are you adding it by selling these cash secured puts? No, I'm just doing limit orders. I get it at the price I want to. I'm like, you could be collecting income as well, getting your stocks purchased at a little bit of a discount, right? Anyway, if you're already delaying the instant gratification by doing a limit order, you should instead do a cash secured put. All right, coming on back to Wendy's. All right, so it looks like we're forming a bottom. And so the strategy that we tend to do here is once we get clear signal that a bottom has been found, and that usually means that we're looking in the rearview mirror, we've already hit our bottom and we're on our way back up to the top of the channel, we set up a initial covering position. In this case, we would want to buy some stock. And we're basically legging into a protected covered put. So I would buy some stock and then I would wait patiently. And as long as the symbol goes up, I'm cool because my covering position is now appreciating, right? So it's just like I bought stock. The other thing I can do, there's different ways to cover selling options. I could do it by buying the stock. Another way I can do it is by buying a option, a call option, right? Because if somebody comes knocking at my door and says, I'd like to exercise the call option you sold me, what I can do to meet that obligation, and you can actually set it up so that your broker knows to do this automatically, is if somebody comes to exercise your front month option, you can go and automatically exercise a call option that you have, a back month option, right? So you're going to go knocking on somebody else's door and say, give me the stock. And then you're going to give them the stock. And you keep the spread, the difference between the two strike price. That's called a spread. So we can either leg into a covered call, or we could leg into a strategically selected bull call diagonal debit spread. So I could either buy stock, or I could buy a deep in the money, far out in time call option. So either one of those would satisfy what I need in place in order to sell options. And I could buy them when I identify the bottom of a channel like this. When I do that, I'm basically buying low, right? I could either buy low the stock, or I could buy low the call option with a stock replacement. A deep in the money, far out in time call option is acting just like the stock, or close to the stock. It's got a lot of intrinsic value. And so I'm buying low, and then I wait, just like in the past couple of times, I wait for the top. If I never get to the top and this thing just starts going up, 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 then I'm not even going to worry about collecting income on this. I'm just going to find my exit signal just like I would do on any directional move, and I would buy low, sell high. But if it stops where it stopped two times in the past around this $23.50 move, then what I would do here is right then I would leg in, I would sell that premium because now I'm selling option premium and I'm going to get the most money for it. I would sell a near term at the money option. Near term means 3 to 5 weeks to expiration at the money. I err to the side of out of the money. So in this case with Wendy's, if I take a look at the option chain, options are trading every dollar. So if I get it up to $23.50, I'd probably sell the $24 option. At the same time, I'd put in a protective because now, right, the symbol is going to start going against, it's going to start going against that initial position, whether I bought stock or I bought a deep in the money call option. While it's going up, that's good, right? That works for that initial position. When it's going against me, I want to have some protection in place. So somewhere around my break-even price, or sometimes I like to pick the protection down here below so that I don't start protecting the position prematurely. So put it where, you know, in price action that I haven't seen before, maybe somewhere around $20.50. If I'm using a protective option, it's trading every dollar. So use maybe the $21 strike price. I'll buy at the same time that I sell that premium, I'll buy a protective option 3 to 6 months out in time with a strike price down there at $21 just to protect my butt. I wouldn't buy it earlier. I wouldn't buy it while the symbol is moving up, because I don't really need it if the symbol is going in the direction I need it to. But when the symbol reverses, sell premium, buy protection, you create this trade zone that then becomes, you have defined risk and reward. And then you just let it go. You let it go until the option expires, releasing you from that obligation. You get to keep the money and you rinse and repeat every month. And you wind up creating, I have a portfolio right now of 8 different symbols. And we're talking about a 8-figure portfolio. It's got 8 symbols in it, quite a few contracts for each symbol. And that's all I'm doing is I'm looking at when I can collect the income, set up the trade, set up this, and then I just let time work, right? Because when you sell premium, you're using the options optimized in a way that they're going to profit on time passing by. Time is quite a reliable variable. It's not like stock price action. It's not like volatilities. It's, you know, if we ever have a situation where a second isn't a second and a minute isn't 60 seconds and an hour isn't 60 minutes and a day is not 24 hours and there's not 50 in a year, we have more to worry about than what's happening with our cash portfolio. The earth is coming to an end. Cool. I got a neat question here. How would you approach a stock that you know is going into bankruptcy? Would you buy a put option such as what happened recently with Yellow, now Yellow Q, if there was a spike in price before it starts to crash? Or would you avoid it? Well, okay. A lot of times when we in the regular world, I group myself, even though I am dealing with a portfolio that's in the tens of millions of dollars, I group myself with everyday folks. I am not one of these what I call market movers. There's a small percentage of mutual fund, hedge fund, pension fund traders that can actually buy so much or sell so much at one time that they can move the markets. Even with my positions, I can't move the markets. I'm barely a blip on the bigger picture, right? So I consider myself, and I don't have access to anything more than just the data that I get and I pay for. So with that said, by the time I know information about a company going bankrupt, the market movers by far have already, it's been on their radar and they've already taken their positions. It's always a bad idea to be late to a game like that. So I personally, in my trading, don't trade anything that's speculative. This would be a speculative play because I know I'm always going to be a few steps behind those people who are making. Okay, so I'm going to put that out there. With that said, there's a couple of different things. First of all, and a lot of folks who trade options don't get into the nuances of options, but you know, I'll ask somebody who tells me they've been trading options for a while. I'm like, do you know about the different types of options? And they'll basically come with me and say, there's only two types. There's calls and there's puts. But in reality, the selection of the strike price and the selection of the expiration date changes the behavior of the option. What influences the option price? And I'll come back and answer Maria your question. I'll make sure I leave enough time for you. I see your follow up question about Wendy's, but let me just finish this question for on Yellow. The options are influenced different. So, for instance, I've had folks who thought that they could use a near term, an option that's expiring in 3 to 5 weeks, at the money option as a stock replacement. And they're always surprised that the stock might do one thing and this option they chose doesn't mirror the stock price. It does something completely different. And that's because strike price and expiration date change how the option responds. A near-term at-the-money option really responds to time passing by. A one-month, two-month out at-the-money option or even slightly out of the money option really responds to implied volatility changes. If you're looking at something like a planned event, maybe 1 or 2 weeks out has an implied volatility spike or so. So you kind of want to realize that like a deep in the money, far out in time option is going to react completely different to the same underlying symbol price move than a near term at the money option or a 3 to 6 month out of the money option. They're going to be totally different. This could be what you're talking about here, could be a volatility play, something we do around earnings season. A lot of times during earnings season, we don't know how investors who trade a particular underlying stock are going to react, even if we have a glimpse at what the earnings announcement's going to be. That has nothing to do with the stock price. It's what the investors who invest in that stock, how they interpret it. Talk about a mind frick trying to get into people's heads, trying to guess how investors are going to react to an earnings announcement. In addition to trying to guess what the earnings announcement is, makes trading earnings directionally, in my vernacular, a crapshoot, right? But there is a predictable pattern that we see ahead of earnings almost across the board on all symbols. And that is, no matter what, as we approach earnings, we see a huge uptick of option purchasing. Remember, I talked earlier in this call regarding how options are used as insurance policies. So we actually see the implied volatility of an option really go high. And then the day after earnings, once everything is a known and there's no more uncertainties, we see what's called a volatility crush. The implied volatility drops quite significantly. Basically, people are like, now we know what happened to the price. I can get rid of these options. I don't need to hold them anymore because I feel more comfortable about what's going to happen for the next 3 months until the next earnings. So the predictable pattern, and I'm always looking for predictable patterns that I could trade, is the volatility rush and then crush, right? Not guessing what direction the stock price is going to go, but rather that there's going to be a volatility rush and then crush. And so you can trade that with options. You can select options that are optimized to change in price based on volatility rush crush. Like you could use a calendar spread, you could short a straddle strangle, you could you could go long a straddle strangle if you want to trade different parameters depending on what you're identifying in the pattern of the symbol. You can find an option strategy to profit on that. I can see this situation you're talking about with yellow cab being the same exact thing, whereas you're getting closer to that date, the implied volatility would rush and then crush. So I could see, for instance, wanting to trade one of these implied volatility structured positions on that. I could also see you're talking about just using a leveraged put because you know that the price is going to do. That would require some really crystal ball on timing. Like, when are people done buying? That always gets me sketchy. But if you can get the timing somewhat right and buy the put when you're at the top and sell the put when you're at the bottom, puts tend to, I would use a 3 to 6 month out put option, maybe two or three strikes into the money to make sure that you get that behavior. But basically, you're trying to speculate. What you theorized there was trying to speculate on a potential price move and using options as a leverage. Be careful, because if you get that wrong and you've got options at a leverage, the options will bite you in the butt. So you get leverage, meaning you can capitalize on great movements, or small movements give you big rewards, but small movements in the wrong direction give you big losses. And I've seen people wipe out their portfolios on those exact speculative moves multiplied with options. Those are not the ways I like to use options. I would probably avoid it, but that's just me. And finally, to follow up on Maria, she said, would you be buying that stock, that Wendy's stock today, or buying the deep in the money, far out in time call option? And the answer is no. I don't have a signal. And one of my favorite signals, I'll share this with you, is called the Fast MACD. You can go to the MACD father and son team there. The father, the son has actually got a whole bunch of really great analysts. I love hearing him speak at the various trader expos. Marvin there. They have a fast MACD. So it's where you take your MACD indicator that comes off the shelf, 12, 27, 9. Those 12 and 27 are the two exponential moving averages. 9 is the MACD differential line or difference line. And you change to 6, 19, and 3. Just kind of speeds it up a little bit. I love the fast MACD to help with the timing. Now, I don't use the fast MACD alone. It's a primary indicator. And I do like to, whenever I come upon a new symbol, I'll backtest it. I'll look to make sure that the signals that the fast MACD gives me do identify the tops and the bottoms, and that the false positives it gets me, that I can use some sort of secondary indicator or secondary pattern like volume validation to negate those. Make sure it works when you have the hindsight and backtesting of what really was a reversal and what wasn't a reversal. And then I'll actually paper trade it moving forward just to test those signals to make sure what I forgot. But I would use like a fast MACD, and the fast MACD has, first of all, it's given me a lot of this whole time that it's been hovering around 21. 2125, 2150. You can see it's been giving us a signal and then quickly retracting that the next day. So I'm at a point now where I'm waiting to see yet another green arrow and to see if that green arrow sticks. That would be the fast MACD crossing the fast MACD average or difference line. So I haven't seen that yet. And I'm an end of day trader. So I'll be looking every end of day for that signal to appear. And then with my basic trade rules the next day, I'll make sure that the symbol is going the way I want it before I place the trade. And you can see each one of these, I would get the signal and then it would never get a fill. And so wait for your timing signal before you place that trade. Hey, I only have a few minutes left. If you guys are interested in selling these or selling premium, in other words, using options and basically making money as time passes by using options rather than, you know, stuff like that. I have a free webinar that you can go check out. It's about an hour long. It is pre-recorded, but it's in a player that makes it seem like it's live. It's got examples. I try to update the examples often. Let me give you the website for that. It's optioninvesting.org. I'm actually going to try this because I want to make sure that the website actually works. So let me pull over a browser here. Just grab this one. I got a typical nerd, right? I got screens all over the place. So let me bring over this Google window. It's optioninvesting.org/ what is the forward slash? Let me just see really quick.
Webby. W-B-B-Y. That's what you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Webby. I posted it in the chat already.
Oh, cool. Look at him. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if you got it because I sent the email late today. Yeah, optioninvesting.org/Webby. Let's make sure that you can get into my webinar that way. Oh, it looks yes. So you'll get to a screen like this and you can watch it in real time. Just click yes and get yourself in there. You can either watch it right away or you can schedule it for the future. But check out that webinar. I find that when people watch that webinar, they get about 3 to 5 pages worth of notes. So if you take notes the old-fashioned way like I do, make sure you have some good pencils or a pen if you're feeling confident, and at least 3 to 5 sheets of paper. And you know, get a good idea about how to sell options if that kind of wows you. No cost, nothing like that. Just check out my webinar. I'd love to have people comment on that. And there you go.